Chapter 49, Hybrid Prototype Technique. So far, we've explored user prototypes, which are pure simulations, feasibility prototypes for addressing technical risks, and live data prototypes designed to be able to collect evidence or even statistically significant proof as to the effectiveness of a product or an idea. While these three categories of prototypes handle most situations well, a wide variety of hybrid prototypes also combine different aspects of each of these in different ways. One of my favorite examples of a hybrid prototype, and an exceptionally powerful tool for learning quickly in product discovery, is today often referred to as a Wizard of Oz prototype. A Wizard of Oz prototype combines the front-end user experience of a high-fidelity user prototype with an actual person behind the scenes performing manually what would ultimately be handled by automation. A Wizard of Oz prototype is absolutely not scalable, and we would never send any significant amount of traffic to this. But the benefit from our perspective is that we can create this very quickly and easily, and from the user's perspective, it looks and behaves like a real product. For example, imagine that today you have some sort of live chat-based help for your customers, but it's only available during the hours when your customer service staff is in the office. You know that your customers use your product from all around the world at all hours, so you would like to develop an automated chat-based system that provides helpful answers anytime. You could and should talk to your customer service staff about the types of inquiries they routinely get and how they respond. A concierge test could help you learn that quickly. Soon, you will want to tackle the challenges of this sort of automation. One way to learn very quickly and test out several different approaches is to create a Wizard of Oz prototype that provides a simple chat-based interface. However, behind the scenes, it is literally you as product manager or another member of your team who is receiving the requests and composing responses. Soon we begin to experiment with system-generated responses, perhaps even using a live data prototype of our algorithm. These types of hybrids are great examples of the build things that don't scale philosophy of product discovery. By being a little clever, we can quickly and easily create tools that let us learn very quickly. Admittedly, it's mainly qualitative learning, but that's often where our biggest insights come from anyway. Discovery Testing Techniques. Overview. In product discovery, we're essentially trying to quickly separate the good ideas from the bad as we work to try to solve the business problems assigned to us. But what does that really mean? We think of four types of questions we're trying to answer during discovery. 1. Will the user or customer choose to use or buy this? Value. 2. Can the user figure out how to use this? Usability. 3. Can we build this? Feasibility. 4. Is this solution viable for our business? Business viability. Remember that for many of the things we work on, most or all of these questions are very straightforward and low risk. Your team is confident. They have been there and done this many times before, and so we will proceed to delivery. The main activity of discovery is when these answers are not so clear. There is no prescribed order to answering these questions. However, many teams follow a certain logic. First, we will usually assess value. This is often the toughest and most important question to answer. And if the value isn't there, not much else matters. We likely will need to address usability before the user or customer can even recognize the value. In either case, we usually assess usability and value with the same users and customers at the same time. Once we have something that our customers believe is truly valuable, and we have designed it in a way that we believe our users can figure out how to use, then we'll typically review the approach with the engineers to make sure this is doable from their technical feasibility perspective. If we're also good on feasibility, then we'll show it to key parts of the business where there may be concerns. Think legal, marketing, sales, CEO, etc. We'll often address these business risks last because we don't want to stir up the organization unless we're confident it's worthwhile. Also, sometimes the ideas that survive are not so similar to the original ideas that we started with, and those original ideas may have come from a business stakeholder. It's much more effective to be able to show that stakeholder some evidence of what did and didn't work with customers and why and how you ended up where you are.